All right, so today is a somber day for two reasons. By the time this episode airs, it'll be long non-somber, if that's a word, you know? But today is Yom Kippur, and I know that, you know, now it's not today, but that's the beauty of pre-recorded shows. And today is actually Emily Burke's last day in the studio for a little bit before she ventures to Illadelph. So, I just want to say that I'm excited that I'm doing a show right now with the best co-host in the radio biz, Emily Burke, but I'm sad AF.
Thank you. I'm sad AF too. I'd be lying if I say I'm not a little excited to go back to Philadelphia and hang out there for a bit, but you know, I feel like it's always... It depends where I am. It's the opposite, where when I'm in Philadelphia, I want to come back to L.A. But when I'm in L.A., I just want to go back to Philadelphia. So I can never win.
I can never figure out what t-shirt to wear.
Yeah. Well, you have a lot. You have like a nice collection.
Please don't out me on my t-shirt collection, which you have actually been bequeathed certain.
I know. That's how I know you have a lot.
Oh, I just actually what's awesome is I got a text from Tyler as I'm doing this intro. So... I'm responding to you, Tyler. We're going to, this is amazing. This is usually my phone is off when I record these intros, actually when we record these shows, but I'm actually glad. Anyway, Tyler, that's pretty badass. This is the first time I've actually interacted with someone while on an interview. So
Oh my God.
I guess it's not as somber anymore.
No, so, it's not a somber episode. It's an exciting episode. I think I'm really happy that I was here for this one because I think it's going to be really great. And I mean, I edit these things anyway, so I'm always going to hear them first. But I'm glad that I'm actually here to listen to it live.
I'm glad you're here to listen to it live, / sad. So the next few weeks, as you guys all know from listening, we've hit well over 100 episodes. I don't even know what episode this is because we're pre-recording in advance. We had a trilogy of recaps from 100 to 102. And we're booked out till like November of 2019, which is stupid, I know. But it is what it is, stupid in a good way. And I just want to give a shout out before I give those people shout outs that Ms. Wendy Ford, publicist to the stars in Orange County, thank you so much for setting this up. We had a nice meal at the Citadel and it changed my perspective on being. We've got a show with Alex Rossiter next week, and Alex is my favorite talent buyer in the business from working with him at the studio at Webster Hall multiple times with bands that I've been in to his current position at Ad Hoc. I really like him, and I think he's just a good person and an honest guy. The following week, we've got Eric Wiener on the show, and Eric is doing a lot of cool, I guess, quote-unquote party planning stuff behind the scenes to unite the scene, which I think we need. So I'm good on potential future shout outs. Do you have anything you want to say before we have Tyler Zarzeka on the show?
Anything of importance or relevance? No, I think.
Thank you for that. That's a sick outro.
Yeah. Welcome to the show, guys.
Welcome to the show, guys. Every single Tuesday at 5 o'clock Pacific time, Waldman's Words airs on Adobe Radio, which is 8 o'clock Eastern time, where Emily Burke will sadly be. On Sunday mornings, bright and early, 5 a.m. Pacific time, 8 a.m. Eastern time, where Emily Burke will be. You can go to adobe.com, stream every single episode for free, which rhymes with where Emily Burke will be in Philly. And oh God. I know, seriously, I didn't even plan that. That is what. What isn't a word. And also... go on iTunes, subscribe, podcast app, every single episode. There's so many people we've spoken with. We're very fortunate and so many more to come. So speaking of more to come, enjoy these songs, enjoy these commercials, and enjoy yourself. Hello, we are here again with Emily's last episode for a little bit. But here's the bright side. We've got Tyler Zarzeka. Is that how you pronounce the name? This is something that... I screw up sometimes, so I want to make sure that I'm one for one today.
It's actually something that everyone screwed up for my entire life.
Yeah. God damn it.
Look, it's we say Zarzeka.
God damn it.
Zarzeka is very much allowed.
Emily's always right. And I honestly thought going into this that we'd start with me being correct, but it's all downhill from here. Very worried about the stay of this episode now, but...
No, it's kind of a running joke in this podcast series of you getting names wrong. If anyone ever wants to do like a full cut of just Scott getting people's names wrong, I would love to listen to it.
I mean, I'd love to listen to it slash hate it, but Zarzeka. Okay, so... I'm going to make a dad joke and then we'll start. Do you experience a lot of discrimination because of the virus?
The virus?
Zika.
Oh, Zika, yeah.
Zing.
You know, not as much.
Good.
That's, you know, maybe once a year somebody will mention the Zika virus, but...
My friend Billy Chlamydia experiences it all the time. So, Emily is not laughing, but you are. So that means we're off to a good start. So...
That's awesome.
I just want to give Wendy Ford one more shout out. I'm sure she'll be mentioned once or never on this again. But she's awesome. She facilitated this, and this has been scheduled for months. So thank you for your dedication slash patience.
Thank you. And thanks to Wendy for setting this up. Yeah.
She's awesome. So to you. So not to everyone listening, but Emily and I, we know that you have quite an expansive resume as a drummer, but I just want to know, you know, where you're from and what got you into music, whether... It was as a performer, as a fan.
I'm from Sacramento, California, and that was in, you know, 2003, a big hardcore emo screamo scene.
The artery scene.
What's that?
The artery scene, and one of my favorite bands of all time, Far, is from there, and I'm sure everyone talks about Deftones quite a bit too.
They do. But I don't know about Far though. Far, that's a. I'll have to look that one.
Oh my god, dude! They like. Late 90s, they define post-hardcore for me. So, strong awesome. Wreck from a 37-year-old whose back hurts.
Same. I actually started late in music. It wasn't until like my senior year of high school that I started, you know, hanging out with people that were involved in the hardcore scene or the pop punk scene, and started going to shows and finagled my way into saying that I knew how to play drums, even though I didn't. And started in bands, and that was like the start of my drumming career. And I was, you know, I was 18 years old at the time.
Well, what music, what postcard? Let's go back a little bit. And then I just was reminded, because you said pop punk, my old band, The City Drive, toured with a band called Self Against City from that area. So shout out to the capital of California and former residents of Arnold Schwarzenegger. But like, what post-hardcore bands were you into at the time?
I loved Thursday growing up. Okay. Thursday was like a big band for me. Seosin also, definitely a huge influence of mine. A lot of Rufio. I don't know if you know Rufio.
Yeah, dude, I saw Rufio perform. The bill was this. It was Rufio, Autopilot Off,
Damn.
Sugar Cult, wait, it's gang. Sugar Cult, as they were touring, you know, it was insane. It was the first time I'd seen them. I love Sugar Cult, and it was as they were about to release, you know, Pretty Girl as a single, like Bouncing Off the Walls Again was doing well, and they had songs in Van Wilder and the Ataris, and that was actually, I think, the very first time I went to a show alone, and it was terrifying. It was in the middle of Pontiac, Michigan, like a suburb of Detroit, but I was scared. But the pop punk and the shredding from Rufio made me happy. So I haven't heard that name in a while. Thank you for that.
Never heard that name at all.
No. Yeah, I've never seen them live. I'm bummed about that. I don't know if I can too.
You can. No, I saw them this decade actually. This show you might even think is better. It was Rufio Mest MXPX. It was pretty sweet. Yeah. So
that's awesome. Oh man, but yeah, Under Oath was another big band too. With,
okay,
Aaron Gillespie on drums. Yeah,
yeah, he's a beast. He's so good. Man. I mean, he's even drummed for Paramore, which is nuts. But the fact that he's able to sing and play those extremely intricate slash hard hitting beats, like it's stupid. So you said senior year in high school, you put on a ruse and convinced people, but like, how did you personally start? Did you take lessons, or were you just kind of like, because if this was the earlier part of last decade, you had the internet where you could learn as well. So I'm just curious. Because, again, I'm old and my back hurts, so I want to learn about the young kids.
Yeah, we had the internet, but the internet didn't, you know, have YouTube on it. You couldn't download a drum DVD or somebody playing the drum beat you wanted to. I grew up literally with my cassette deck and recording the radio, and when songs came on, since I couldn't afford CDs, I would just record what I heard, and then that was my CD that I could play drums along to. But I also didn't even have a drum set. I was playing with sticks that my dad got me on my bed on binders.
On binders?
And pillows and stuff like that.
That's a new definition of math rock.
Yeah.
Zing. I'm just trying to do as many stupid dad jokes so Emily truly doesn't miss me because she's heading
to
Philadelphia.
Killing it.
Thank you. If you follow me on social media, you will realize that I either kill it or like suffocate it to death to the point of exhaustion. But so I guess, I mean, because you know that YouTube, actually, I just was discussing this with someone the other day. Do you know what kickstarted YouTube to being a household name?
I do not actually know.
Janet Jackson, Super Bowl, Nipplegate.
Really?
Yep. People sharing that. That was one of the impetuses for YouTube being a thing. And I mean, now YouTube can't, unless it has the network's permission, air, you know, like stuff on NBC or CBS. But I was learning guitar in the 90s and I took lessons. But I found that the computer was very helpful just in terms of just finding some random songs like on like Napster, for example, when it wasn't like the huge corporate entity. But like, did you ever take any formal lessons? Because if you didn't, props to you, because you cracked the code.
No, I definitely took lessons.
Okay. Well, props to your teacher.
Yeah. It was my first teacher was actually Mike Johnston, who became a very famous online educator, teacher.
Okay.
And when I went to the closest music shop I could near my house, happened to be a place called Skip's Music.
Shout out to Skip's 80. Music. Shout out to the 80.
Yeah. And I chose him because he looked the youngest and he had a little like arm tattoo and everyone else just seemed like old jazz dudes. And I was like, I don't want to learn jazz. I want to learn rock and roll. And I biasly chose him based on his looks.
Well, this is where a bias works.
Yeah, if it worked out.
It worked out for you. I mean, I get it. I mean, if I were a teenager again, I wouldn't want to be taught certain rudiments from an extreme classical music scholar. I mean, there's definitely something to be said about being as versatile of a musician as possible and learning everything, but you just wanted to fucking rock, so it makes sense.
Exactly. I mean, I realize that now, yeah. Learning, you know, the history of drums and jazz and different styles will always help playing, you know, in whatever genre you want to be. So I know that now as an adult, but as a kid, it was pure just like, show me stick tricks and how to hit hard for an hour straight.
I mean, that's tough to do. I mean, people don't realize how tough it is on, I guess, your... I'm pointing my body. You don't see me, but obviously, like your calves are probably rock hard, and your bison tries. And I mean, it's always interesting when I see a heavy set drummer, because I'm like, how the fuck do you do that? It's like the greatest workout. Yeah, it's like the ultimate boot camp. So
yeah, I think it's just a tonal thing. You know, I'm definitely not buff by any means, but
oh, I'm looking at your picture now. My God, you remind me of The Rock. From a few years ago, man.
Oh my God.
So what was your first band? And you took lessons from Mike, so I just want to give a shout out to Mike Johnston for... It's Johnston, it's not Johnson, right? So
Johnston, yes.
So I got that right. Okay, cool. So Zarzika. Johnston. Okay, cool. I'm learning. So were you like gigging locally, like Ace of Spades places, or like
no,
what did you do?
Man. The dream was Boardwalk.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I performed there.
Yeah? Nice. Yes. My band, which my first band was, my first real band was called Second Session, and it was comprised of just my friends, and we had a great time, but the goal was to always play the Boardwalk, and towards the end of me living in Sacramento, we got to play the Boardwalk.
Nice. Respect.
Yeah.
But what were the names of some of these bands?
Sorry, say that again.
What were the names of some of the bands that you were in? Because, you know, who knows, there might be some random file out there in the interwebs.
That was really it. For me, my short-term living in Sacramento, like obviously I grew up in there, but from when I discovered music my senior year to when I moved to LA for music school was only about a year and a half, so maybe 2 years. And so I really just had that one band and then quit the band just to move to LA.
And you went to MI like straight when you got here, or did you do other stuff before that?
Straight to MI. It was pure just, you know, flee the nest of my parents for the first time, live in a big city with a roommate I'd never met before, and, you know, time to grow up kind of thing.
And you've been here ever since with the exception of your touring, correct?
Yeah, it's been 14 years now.
So you've had your LA bar mitzvah. I've been in LA for 15 years now, which is stupid. And Emily, the girl in front of me, has lived here her whole life with the exception of school.
Well,
nice.
Also,
nice.
I'm going to clarify what MI is
for people thank
that
you.
Don't go.
It stands for meh.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
For people who are not in LA or just have never heard of it, it's a school in the heart of Hollywood called Musicians Institute. And a lot of musicians go there. A lot of people who want to be producers or engineers go there.
People go there for music business. People go there for all facets. And Emily's right. It literally is in the heart of Hollywood. Did you live near the school with your stranger roommate?
I did, yes. And that stranger roommate turned out to be a really good friend by coincidence. But yeah, I lived like, you know, maybe a good mile away from school. And I used to skateboard down Hollywood Boulevard every morning to class. Like,
you're one of those people skating to MI. Oh my God. I see y'all. You guys love the tourists, don't you? Walking around and taking pictures of like,
I hate the tourists.
Well, you definitely picked a school that is not near any tourist attractions. Hashtag Hollywood and Highland. Yeah,
exactly. It is chaos, but it's nice. Once you're in the boundaries of the school, you feel like you're there for school. There's really no distractions.
You mean Ripley's Believe It or Not wasn't a distraction for you?
Yeah. The Starline tours.
Or the I'm trying to think. I actually saw the very first time I saw a movie at Mann's Chinese Theater, I saw Get Rich or Die Trying, the 50 Cent story, and that was pretty sweet.
How do you remember that?
it's because I've never used hard drugs, and also I've had a photographic memory for a while. Emily can comment on that.
Yeah. He remembers everything.
I remember everything you've said, Zarzeka. I mean, Zika.
Thanks.
He remembers, and then he also writes down. So it's like a double memory.
It's a demory. Nice. But this not. I know this is Waldman's words. This isn't. I mean, we could spend the next 7 minutes talking about how awesome I am, but this is you. So what did you learn? Because I've actually, the guy who played in the band I was in after the City Drive, Lido Beach, he's a drummer. He went to MI, but I want to hear from your perspective, like, were the classes that you're in, especially the drum ones, like, was it levels from really, really beginner to expert, or was it pretty much like there's a beginner class, an intermediate class, expert class? Like, how did that work?
Well, it's an accelerated program school. It only lasts 2 years, and there's three levels that you can complete based on semesters. So there's a level one for beginners, and then if you graduate from that, you can go to level two, and then finally level three is very, very advanced. And so, yeah, I did both 2 years, and honestly, the beginner class, first day, they kind of threw me in front of the class, and they threw everyone in front of the class, and they asked you to play Billie Jean on drums, which I don't know if you know drums or anybody listening knows drums. It's a very simple, basic drum beat, but the feel of that is really difficult to do. So I had to go perform that in front of class, never performed in front of any other drummer before, and I couldn't play the drums to save my life. The teacher looked at me like, this kid has so much work to do.
Like, what the fuck is he doing here? Why is he wasting my time?
Yes. So
that's a good feeling, right?
I knew that second that like the school was a necessity for me, and like I needed to buckle down, and the next 2 years was purely going to be learn, you know, music and don't make any friends.
Well, fun fact about Billie Jean, I believe Toto is the band on Thriller. I heard that, unless you might be able to confirm this more than me. I know for a fact the guitar player played it. Do you know who drummed? I know Quincy Jones obviously produced it, and it sounds amazing, but
I don't remember. I want to say it was Jonathan Moffitt.
Okay.
But he was not in Toto, though.
Was he like an uber session drummer of the 70s and 80s?
Yes.
That's awesome. Well, Quincy Jones, respect to you. And yeah, no, I mean, because sometimes simple beats or extreme repetitive ones might be more difficult to do just because some people might think it's like monotonous. Like I had the pleasure of seeing Devo live a bunch of times, and mm-hmm. I actually like recorded with this guy named Bob Casale, rest in peace. He was an awesome guy. He was in Devo, and I stood 5 feet from Josh Freese, and I didn't care about anything else but Josh Freese.
Dude, like, Josh Freese is like my top drummer of all time. Well, I love hearing that name.
Well, I'm glad that I said that and that this wasn't planned, but the dude was a human fucking click track. Like if there was a song that was like a 4 minute song where, you know, he's playing the same 2 to 3 second beat over and over, it was literally like watching like Kobe Bryant play basketball. It was perfect.
Yeah, I mean, this is a fantastic transition because he is literally what I wanted to be. I loved that he was a drummer that could be in a punk rock band, The Vandals, mm-hmm. and then go and record for pop singers like, you know, Kelly Clarkson or whatever, Avril Lavigne, and then also be in A Perfect Circle.
I saw him with
A
Perfect Circle.
Fun bands like Devo, like
Weezer. And you know this, but a lot of other people won't, but sometimes when major, major bands are recording, the drummer just can't hack it. So if Josh Freese is thanked in a band's album, hint, he probably played a song or the whole thing on it. And the dude's like the kind of guy who can go into the studio, he can hear the song like once or twice, and he plays it like Van. I'm going to keep giving analogies like Van Gogh perfect. It's like stupid, like how talented that guy is.
I would agree. He has the touch, man. Everything about him, his ghost notes, his aggressiveness, his simplicity with his fills, and just everything about him is what I wanted to be.
The second time I saw Blink-182, it was on Warped Tour mm-hmm. in 99. And what was crazy about that was like Eminem played and got booed. And obviously now Eminem does the booing. But Travis was sick. And so they had various drummers on the Warped Tour play, and the Vandals played. So Josh Freese played the very first song, and it was just like, it's really difficult to outshine Travis Barker, but I think he did. it was just like stupid watching. Anyway, this is not the Josh Freese fanboy hour, but we can honestly, yeah. I could talk about that guy because like I would say, because you did mention Seosin, and Seosin's drumming is insane, but like I can't think of a better drummer I've seen play live than him, unless I go to see you play.
Oh, you're too kind. Nah. But no way.
All right, so I guess with the rest of this segment, we'll wrap this up in about 2 minutes, and then we'll go into your actual career. But mm-hmm. what advice would you give to someone who wants to go to Berkeley or wants to go to MI or just wants to study drumming at a higher level? What advice would you give aside from, you know, practice and make no friends?
Exactly. It's tough because I meet a lot of kids that have the same question, and my question to them is, where is their end result? Do they want this to be a hobby that they just happen to be really good in, and they also, you know, want a 9-to-5 job? I know those people that hate touring and need to survive in the city they live in, so they have that option. But then there's some people that want to make music and, you know, be able to see the world for free, and you need school. Like it's the most important thing, and that was kind of drilled into me from my dad. He was like, you can be a rock star, but you have to go to school. You have to understand the history of this instrument. You have to immerse yourself in this if this is going to be your career for the rest of your life. And that was a hard decision, but I wouldn't be where I am without the teachers that I've taken over the years and the school that I went to. It was just very beneficial. So you know, just buckle down and practice and work really hard. That's the biggest advice I can get.
Well, I mean, I appreciate it, and I'm sure that, you know, a kid growing up in Elk Grove would appreciate that too, you know. So
yeah,
I'm gonna leave this segment with either a statement or an inquiry from my wonderful assistant / co-host Emily Burke, and then we'll take a short break.
See you guys soon.
Wow. I don't know if it gets much better than that. That was straight elusive, straight into the point. So I guess the adjective that I would give to describe the previous 20 minutes of my life is thoughtful. You are extremely articulate, and I think a lot of people are going to learn a lot from you, and I'm very excited to go into the meat and potatoes of this, or if you're a vegan, the seitan and potatoes of this. and learn about, you know, you've performed for millions of people on major TV shows and have been on the road with some major people. So I definitely want to learn what, for lack of a better word, or pun intended, kickstarted that.
Yeah, man. Thanks for doing this. This is awesome. I love, you know, kind of telling my story and helping people out that have questions about, you know, the
industry.
You
can thank me when it's over, Tyler. No, I appreciate the thank you. I honestly, again, we could talk about me and thank yous the entire rest of the episode, but I'll give Wendy Ford the last shout out of the first segment. So shout out to Wendy Ford. Enjoy these commercials, enjoy these songs, and we'll be right back with Tyler Zarzika.
Hi, welcome back to Waldman's Words with Tyler Zarzika, Scott Waldman, and Emily Burke.
What up?
Yeah, we took a short break, but to you it's probably a song or some commercials or a nice little noise if you're listening to this on the podcast.
Yeah.
It was a fantastic song. I loved it.
Yeah, great. Yeah, it was the best song ever. It was Judith by A Perfect Circle.
Hell yeah, it was.
I guarantee you, I'd be willing to bet so much money that that's not what it was. But
not going to be the song, no.
But dude, I got to see A Perfect Circle on their first tour, opening for Nine Inch Nails, and it was cool. And speaking of cool, Tool is cool. All right, so Josh Freese. So did you start, I guess, gigging while you were at school, or did you really just focus more on learning as much as possible and then afterwards, I guess, making it into a career?
It took me about a year into school to start realizing that I could look for, you know, local gigs and small gigs, and I did, but it wasn't until the few months after I graduated that I landed an audition with a pop singer. Her name was Marin, and we did my first tour ever, which was for the troops overseas in
Pacific
Ocean.
That's quite a way to start. I mean, and that's...
Yeah.
that is a beautiful thing. I mean, regardless of whether, you know, you're Republican, Democrat, support the wars, don't support it. Support the troops, not the war. And it must be so invigorating for them. We actually had just recently Casey Quigley, who does similar things for sick people. She works with the Living the Dream Foundation, and if you're not giving back, what the fuck are you doing? So thank you for doing that.
Yeah, no, and thank you to the troops. I mean, that was amazing just to play for people who, you know, risk their lives to save our country.
So where'd you go?
We basically just followed the Pacific Rim. So we started in Alaska, Hawaii, Japan.
Oh my God, dude.
Your first tour started in Alaska.
Yeah. Most people's first tours are at like VFW halls.
Ohio.
Ohio. That's our benchmark state.
It wasn't meant to be a brag, but that was it. That was the card I was dealt, you know.
Wow.
And it wasn't easy. We had to, you know, lug a drum set through every airport internationally once we got through like Malaysia and the Philippines and stuff like that.
Oh my God. I mean, yeah. That's being thrown into the fire. Do you have any cool stories from doing that? I mean, I've been to 44 states and Alaska is not one of them. So I'm not even going to tell you about how jealous I am of your Asian travels. But like, was your very first show in Alaska?
Well, I mean, I played shows in Sacramento with my crew.
No, on tour. On tour. Yeah,
it was in Alaska off the coast on an island that's owned by the military. And it was the time of the year when the sun didn't set.
Okay. So it was like the definition of gorgeous, I assume.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But that wasn't even the best part of the trip. The best part was the last place we got to go was you have to be invited only if you're a civilian, and it's in the middle of the Indian Ocean. It's called Diego Garcia.
Never even heard of it.
Yeah. What the fuck are you talking about?
It's literally the width of a runway, and it houses, you know, a few thousand people. But that's like America's like holding point in the middle of the Indian Ocean if they need to get anywhere in that area. And we played a show out there, and we had like 3 days off.
What do you do in the middle?
How was the food?
Like deep sea fishing, and I got super seasick. And we had like barbecues and parties, and then we performed for 2 nights. I mean, it was insane.
With the best security on the planet, yeah. So it's yeah. Like, Wow. So when you got back to LA and you're walking, skating down Hollywood and Highland, you're like, what the fuck am I doing now? Like,
well, I'd already graduated. So
no, I know.
I was then driving my car.
Why'd you correct me? I had such a cool visual of a dude like drumming like on a war base and then going to Asia and having the best sushi on the planet and then coming back to Hollywood and Highland and getting scoured for change outside that McDonald's.
I mean, I did go back to my job at Best Buy.
Okay.
I was in retail, so it was very humbling, you know.
Which Best Buy location? Which location? Because I've been to quite a few in the Los Angeles area.
Hollywood and Highland. Hollywood.
I don't know.
God, I'm drawing a blank. No. It is Sunset and La Brea.
Okay.
With the Target.
Sunset. Wow. Sunset La Brea. That's right near the Griddle Cafe. Sunset and La Brea. Sunset. Well, that it's on Sunset and Fairfax. Well,
there's a Target over there. They're kind of connected.
Yeah. Oh, the Target there. That's on Santa Monica. That's
Santa Monica and La Brea. That's
so. You correct me. I correct you. Yeah. No. No. We're
it's been
learning.
So long.
Learning from each other. No, I know that Best Buy. I know that. That's right by like Formosa. And another fun fact about that area. That's where. There was a place down there called a Swing House, and I'm sure it still exists.
The original Swing House.
Yes.
It does not exist. They moved.
That's fucking depressing, but I would showcase for every label on the planet there. Anyway, let's make this happy. So who else were you working with besides Marin? And admittedly, I've never heard of her, but, I mean, she got to perform for the troops, so win for her and you.
She was lovely. She is actually now a TV host in Vegas.
Whoa.
Yeah, she's very... gorgeous girl married to this awesome dude that was a good friend of ours, and they live out in Vegas now, and they're doing well. And
well, shout out to Marin, and shout out to the weather that's not Vegas related, because my God. We looked at your bio, and obviously Wendy sent us some information. Shout out to Wendy again.
But
I'm just curious, I guess, what was next, because like you have so many, and I've heard of all of them, so I'm just curious.
Well, it was kind of a weird turn. I randomly quit Best Buy. I kind of was just fed up with it, and I walked in one day, gave my 2-week notice, and came home, and it was literally like, I don't know what I'm gonna do. And I got a call from a buddy named Mike May, who I met at MI, and he was like, there's a job opening up at Center Staging. Do you want to work there? You'd be working around drums all day long. And I was like, I know how to play drums, but I know nothing about tuning, maintenance. I don't know anything about shipping or studios or all that. And he's like, don't worry, we'll teach you. Ended up getting the job, and that opened up career number two in the music industry for me, which I graduated and still didn't even know that this was even an option, you know, the production side of the music industry.
But was your title like a tech at a backline company? Like, can you explain to people what that means? Because, you know, Center Staging, it's definitely an industry name for musicians and suits behind the scenes, but what exactly is it?
Center Staging is awesome. It's just a kind of like the greatest version of a studio where bands go to play. But Center Staging is just such a great facility with great, you know, everything, all the gear and everything they represent is fantastic. So it's usually A-list clients. So it's where Michael Jackson was right before he died. Beyonce rehearses there, Justin Timberlake, any big TV show, artist, performer, they only go to Center Staging. But basically what it is it's a facility with guitars, every guitar you can imagine, every bass, every keyboard, microphone, drum set, and we provide that gear for award shows, local TV shows, touring acts, or if bands need to come and rehearse, we'll supply the gear. So I was just one of the guys that worked in the drum department, and I would assemble drum sets and set them up in a studio for so many different artists. It was an interesting job.
Well, I mean, you're meeting personalities large and small, probably mostly large. And I mean,
Yeah.
It doesn't get much bigger than Beyonce. So that's insane. Yeah. But I guess, were you doing that simultaneously with touring gigs? Like, I mean, I imagine a place like that would be actually tolerant of you leaving to go on a tour, because I feel like they would get it.
Yeah, no, they were very, very, very tolerant. People obviously wanted to tour and have their own kind of band, and this was their day 9-to-5 job. So I was touring with an artist. Her name was Leslie Roy. She was a Irish pop singer. on Jive Records, and this was 2008, and I was going between touring for her and then back and forth with Center Staging.
Wow. Well, that's fucking cool, and we actually don't have too much time left. We're almost halfway done with this segment, so no, I know that's the nature of learning so much about each other, but can you, in, I guess, an elevator pitch version, tell the people listening some of the artists you've worked for? Because, you know, for me, the one that really sticks out is Hanson, to be honest with you. So, like,
My boys, I love Hanson.
I do, too, and they even have hops. I saw Hanson at the House of Blues.
Hops is a great beer, yes.
And they just seem like nice people in an industry filled with shitheads. So I'm just curious as to, like, any stories you have. Or you could just talk about Hanson. Like, to me, that's almost as cool as Josh Freese.
Hanson was great, man. That was an eye-opening act. It was literally what I attribute it to, what it would feel like to tour with the Beatles. Because the audience, the girls,
slow your roll, dude.
It was deafening. When the first song started, you could not hear music because the girls were screaming so loud.
Okay.
And like crying and fainting and all that stuff. Anyway, so
I was fucking with you on the Beatles. I can only, especially in the mid to late 90s, like every girl that was my age and younger was all about Hanson, and they kind of had their own kind of Beatlemania at that time. So
they did, yeah. So I just went from that. The next big artist that I worked for was Usher, and that was 2010 to about 2013. I also worked for Demi Lovato and American Idol tour, Adele.
You're like everything you're naming, including the American Idol tour, is ginormous. But you drummed. I mean, I honestly, like, Demi Lovato's older pop-punky stuff, I really like. Like, Here It Goes Again, or Here We Go Again. Like, holy shit, but girl can sing. You're working with incredible people, but you just said Adele. I had no idea.
This was me working for these artists, so this was not me drumming for the artists. This was me as a backline tech, you know, setting up the band's gear and stuff like that.
Well, that's more than every single person listening. So, but I guess tell me about some touring gigs you had, or you could just talk about Zach Hanson the whole time, whatever you want to do, man.
Zach's great. Oh my God. But no, for my drumming career, which kind of, this took a turn about 5 years ago. One of the bigger artists that I've ever played for is Charlie Puth. And I was his first drummer in his first band. And that really like projected me into being a professional drummer, which was, you know, such a whirlwind playing with him. But yeah, now I play for Noah Cyrus and Kiara, and constantly touring back and forth with him.
Wait, when did you start drumming for Noah Cyrus?
This was October of last year, so it's been almost a year.
Oh, okay. I saw Noah Cyrus summer of last year, and I'm like, I wonder if he was drumming for her.
That was my buddy Elias, who's also the drummer for Kesha. And he kind of juggles this gig with me.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, because when I read your bio and I looked at all the things, by the way, so many people, to the people out there, look up Tyler Zarzika. I know we have him on the show and that you're listening to everything, but also like follow him on Instagram and everything, because he is always on the road, and he has so many people that he is drumming for.
And you're saying he, as in he is on the phone with us.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. Hi. Tyler is going to be third person the rest of this show.
Yeah.
Shout out to Emily, by the way, for doing her research and helping out with everything.
Honestly, I mean, I said in the intro, you didn't hear it, but it took a somber tone because we're recording on Yom Kippur today, and I'm not a religious Jewish person, but it's like the holiest day of the year / saddest for Jewish people. And Emily, this is her last show in the studio for a bit, so not only does she do her research, she edits the show, she does more than I want to admit, and I'm so honored to have her here and sad. So you're a very lucky guy because you get the last one she's co-hosting for a little bit.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I guess, I mean, I just typed in your website. I'd love to hear about playing, you know, on shows like Kimmel or The Tonight Show. I mean, Kimmel, speaking of the heart of Hollywood area, that's quite a commute from MI, right?
It was, you could throw a rock at the Jimmy Kimmel studio. That's, for sure.
you could, and you'd probably hit at least three tourists on the way, but the rock would keep flying.
Dude, it was great. I remember like leaving campus, you would walk by, because I was on my way home, and I happened to be walking by when the Killers were doing a sound check.
Ooh.
And I just had to peek my head over the fence, and I got a free like show. They would play like 6 to 8 songs. It was fantastic.
The last time I was at Kimmel, actually, Sacramento band Deftones played. But when I was here, yeah, they're fucking awesome. But when I was in LA, it was a spring break. My senior year of college, my friends and I went and saw the new Jimmy Kimmel Show because it just started, and the co-host was Don King, and and another. Oh my God! This show is sponsored by Sacramento. Guess what? What late '90s, early 2000s band played from the Sacramento area? Distorted guitars, rap metal on that Jimmy Kimmel Show. Just guess. You might get it.
I was going to say Papa Roach.
You're right. I saw Papa Roach perform at Kimmel. So I don't know what it is, but every time I talk to you, we're going to learn something about Sacramento. So you've also played on Ellen, the most likable host of all time. Like, do you interact? Because obviously you're not the star, but, you know, you're in the band and you have a lot of the same amenities. Did you get to interact with Jimmy and Ellen, who for some reason I'm on a first name basis with right now?
No, I didn't. You know, they greet the singer, obviously, but
right.
You know, the band is either usually doing something when they're walking around, or they're in their office doing their work pre-show. So I've actually never met them, but you
were on their show, and millions. I mean, it's not even a joke. Between watching it on TV and streaming it on the YouTube, which we brought up earlier. All right, well, we're going to wrap this up relatively soon, but do you have any other acts besides Noah that you want to give a shout out to that you've toured with?
Yeah. I mean, a guy that I'm playing with currently, his name is Bobby Andonov. He's an Australian pop singer. I'm currently with him as well. And he's fantastic. His music is great. His voice is phenomenal. But no, I've just, the two artists that I'm with right now, I'm just very, very lucky to have. They're both very different. Music wise, but it's challenging, you know, at least for me mentally to put myself into position for both roles.
When do you hit the road again?
In 2 days with Noah Cyrus. I'll be on tour across the US.
Get out of town. Are you guys gonna, is it a full US tour? Like, how many dates?
It's full US, except we don't go to like the Northwest. There's no Portland or Seattle. But I think Noah's about 25 shows, and then when that ends, a week later, I go out with Kiara for the same U.S. run, and also about 25 shows.
Wow, so you're definitely ending this year with a bang.
Yes, it was. It's really nice. I love when I can work literally as much as possible, and I couldn't even cheat a day out of this tour. It goes from basically now until Thanksgiving, so it's awesome.
And when you're doing this, do you sublet where you live, or how does that work?
No, I have a house that I rent in the suburbs, and it's my roommate kind of looks after the place. But no, I do not want to sublet. This is my room.
No, I get it. I when I was touring, I pretty much did it for a few years the earlier last decade, and I intentionally lived in the small room of the apartment, so it was basically a cubby space for my for my stuff. And then after I quit the band, and that cubby space for some reason felt a little bit too tight, so I got a place that was a little bit bigger. But I know a lot of musicians in expensive cities like San Francisco, New York, or LA, you know, sometimes they don't make enough money on the road to pay their rent. So it's cool that you're playing with people that could obviously afford to compensate you in that regard, because these are the A-list of the A-list.
Yeah, man, and I'm just hoping it gets, you know, more bigger and more consistent. I if I could work, you know, 300 days out of the year, that would make me so happy.
Well, I mean, it definitely, from the outside looking in, it appears that you're definitely on your way. So
very close. Yeah,
I'm proud of you, and I don't even know you, so I guess.
Aw, thanks, Scott.
You're welcome. So I would love to hear an adjective on, I guess, your experience on this show, and then Emily Burke's gonna go on a huge rant.
Is thankful an adjective?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll say thankful. I love meeting people, you know, and just, you know, promoting the music community and the drumming community, and, you know, it's so tight-knit, and we all need to support each other and support the arts itself, you know. music's an important thing in our lives, and I wouldn't be where I am without it.
Music has value. Well, yeah. I am very thankful for your thankful. And it's Emily Burke's turn.
Yeah. I mean, it was great having you on. Like we said in the beginning of the show, we don't have a lot of performers on. We usually do behind the scenes, like music people have managers and everything. But I know there's a lot of people that listen to the show and that listen to Idobe that want to be musicians and they want to do exactly what you want to do. And I feel like this is a very insightful interview, and I'm glad that we were able to have you on.
Yeah, thank you. I'd love to do another one. I mean, there's so much more that we didn't even touch yet. It, you know, if you ever want a part two, I'm down.
You know, we've only done one part two episode, and that was incredible. So I can tell you this. I don't anticipate a part two for a while, but especially since Emily is not going to be here, I was entertaining the idea of bringing co-hosts in. So have your people talk to my people. And I can tell you this on record on this show that you'd be a good co-host. So that's an almost confirmation. So
I've been replaced on air.
No, you're actually the cool thing about it is that you are always the co-host when you're here.
Yeah.
But now you basically have caused such a need and have caused me to be so insecure about myself that I need someone else. So, Tyler, again, we have probably 330,000 different ways of getting a hold of each other. I'm sure we'll meet in person and discuss how beautiful LA people are. And mm-hmm. I guess on that note, I'm going to repeat your adjective and say thankful. Emily is going to let everyone know when they can listen to the show. And then I would love it if you would just your socials, your website, whatever you think that the people listening would want to go to learn more about you. So I guess Emily first, we'll wrap this up with you and then enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah, you can listen to Waldman's Words every single Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific time and then 8 p.m. Eastern. We also rerun Sunday mornings at 5 a.m. Pacific, 8 a.m. Eastern. And you could always listen for free on iTunes and Idobe.com.
I was fucking perfect.
I know. I'm good at it now.
So, Tyler.
Pro.
I don't know if your outro is going to be as solid as Emily Burke's, but I have a feeling, you know, it'll be like an A- or a B+. So, please, 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 please tell everyone listening how they can learn more about you besides your website, which is literally your name.
The website's easy. Yeah, it's my name. But everything I really do post to Instagram, which is at tzarzika, spelled phonetically.
Wow, I'm gonna follow you now, dude.
You better.
Hey, don't tell me what to do. This is Waldman's Words.
Is it?
No, it's actually today. It is Tyler Talks.
Yes,
with Emily's explanations.
Those are great. We should take those.
Take them, bro. So yeah, I'm good. I'm happy. This was a really good informative episode. And as Jerry Springer always says, take care of yourselves and each other. I got no laughs on that. Come on. All right. join Oprah's book club. I don't know.
It was supposed to be like really sincere and nice.
It was sincere and nice until I said Jerry Springer's final thoughts, which was like clearly silly.
That's before
my time. It was pretty serious.
Thank you. Oh God. Yeah. I love when I'm being contradicted on my show. It's awesome. No, but before time, just to make you feel really old, Tyler Z, guess how old Emily Burke is? I gave you a
22.
Hint. 22. Dude, wow. Haha. Yeah. He thinks you're older.
Yeah, I'm 21.
Damn it.
She's 21. She's a college senior and she's going to take over the fucking world. But Tyler, you're the man. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Stick around for the rest of the Idobe shows / songs / everything, and take care of yourselves and each other.